Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is Ben Yisrael versus Plus. Mr. Huggins or Ms. Huggins? Sorry. Proceed.
May it please the court, counsel for the state. My name is Kelly Huggins, and I represent Obadiah Ben Yisrael, formerly known as Christopher Peterson. I'm joined at counsel table by Alexa Warner and John Gallo. Mr. Ben Yisrael did not kill anyone. During the fall of 1990, the shotgun killer killed seven people and injured one other person in a series of shotgun shootings in Northwest Indiana. Among those killed were George and Eli Belofsky, who are the victims in the case presently before this court. Police developed a composite sketch of the shotgun killer based on eyewitness descriptions.
I don't want to interrupt your flow of conversation, but we've read all the briefs.
All right, Your Honor. Then I'll turn to the four main characters in this case. Carrie Gilson is the witness to the Hammersley murder and helped prepare the composite. She identified Ronald Harris as the shotgun shooter and testified that there was no way that Mr. Ben Yisrael shot Hammersley. The second, I think, central character is Antoine McGee, who implicated Mr. Ben Yisrael in these shootings, and he testified against Mr. Ben Yisrael in order to obtain a reduced sentence. As the record demonstrates, he had keys to Mr. Ben Yisrael's apartment where the shotgun was found by police, and a car matching the car that he drove at the time was seen across the street from the scene of the Belofsky murders, you know, as close as moments before those murders occurred. Another character, Ronald Harris, it was a known associate of Mr. McGee, was identified by Carrie Gilson as the shotgun shooter, and was convicted of the Rhonda Hammersley murder after Mr. Ben Yisrael was acquitted of the charges in that case. And finally, there's Patrick Fleming, who was the eyewitness who saw the white or light-skinned man depicted in the composite sketch across the street from the scene of the Belofsky murders, as close as moments before those murders. And so turning to and focusing on claim one, which is the ineffective assistance of counsel claim, the Indiana Supreme Court unreasonably applied Strickland versus Washington and unreasonably determined the facts in light of the evidence presented at trial in concluding that Mr. Ben Yisrael was not prejudiced by his trial counsel's deficient performance. I think the record demonstrates that the trial counsel's performance was clearly deficient. Mr. Ben Yisrael's trial counsel failed to read a statement that Patrick Fleming gave to police about the Belofsky murders, even though the Indiana courts found that that statement was provided in discovery by the state. The failure to familiarize themselves with the discovery provided by the state is clearly deficient performance under existing law. The real issue in this case is whether Mr. Ben Yisrael was prejudiced. Mr. Ben Yisrael was prejudiced by his counsel's failure to present the testimony of Mr. Fleming, because if Mr. Fleming would have testified or been called to testify, he would have testified as follows. As Mr. Fleming was leaving the tailor shop where the Belofskys were killed, he saw a white or light-skinned man sitting in a car matching the car driven at the time by Antoine McGee across the street from the tailor shop. That man resembled the white or light-skinned man in the police composite sketches. Fleming thought that the man had a gun. The car the man was sitting in, that Fleming left the tailor shop at 4:10 or 4:20 p.m., which is as close as moments before the shotgun shootings occurred at the tailor shop. Fleming contacted police the following day immediately after hearing about the murders of the Belofskys. The testimony of Mr. Fleming would have allowed Mr. Ben Yisrael's trial counsel to employ the same strategy that had succeeded twice before. In two previous trials for the shotgun shootings, Mr. Ben Yisrael's counsel introduced eyewitness testimony, placing at the scene to the crimes a light or white-skinned man matching the police composite of the shotgun killer. Even though Mr. Ben Yisrael had confessed to those crimes, even though the shotgun used in those crimes was found in his apartment, juries acquitted Mr. Ben Yisrael twice in light of the evidence of the man matching the composite sketch at the scene of the crimes. And in this case, Mr. Fleming's testimony would have allowed trial counsel to employ that same strategy and to establish five key facts. First, trial counsel could have argued that the light or white-skinned man that Fleming saw...
Did the lawyer give a reason for not calling Fleming?
Your Honor, that both trial counsel Jarrett and Woloshansky insisted that they never received Fleming's statement because they said they were looking for exactly that type of evidence. And in the post-conviction proceedings, this argument was raised in the alternative as a Brady violation. The Indiana courts ruled that there was no Brady violation.
I understand your argument about a Brady violation, but how would it be ineffective assistance if the lawyers didn't didn't know about Fleming?
If, in fact, they were provided, which the Indiana courts found they were, provided the statement of Fleming.
So you're saying their evidence isn't credible?
I'm sorry, whose evidence isn't credible? The trial counsel's statement that they didn't receive it? I'm saying that it was decided by the Indiana courts that they did, in fact, receive it. And the fact is they were looking for exactly this type of evidence, and they missed it. That is ineffective performance because they didn't review and familiarize themselves with the discovery provided by the state. They had this in their possession the entire time. It would have been the centerpiece of the defense case, and they didn't review the discovery materials to find it. And as a result, they never interviewed Mr. Fleming. They never called him to testify, and Mr. Ben-Yisrael was prejudiced as a result. Because again, they could have placed, Mr. Fleming could have placed a man matching the composite sketch of the shotgun killer at the scene of the crimes. And trial counsel could have also established that Carrie Gilson, who witnessed the Hammersley murder, had identified the person in the composite positively as Ronald Harris. They could have also established that the state's witness, Antoine McGee, had access to the shotgun used in the killings and was a known associate of Ronald Harris. Counsel could have also argued that the car in which this man was sitting, that Fleming saw, matched the description of the car driven at the time by Antoine McGee. And finally, Mr. Fleming would have said he did not see Mr. Ben-Yisrael. In short, the testimony of Mr. Fleming would have put Ronald Harris at the scene of the Belofsky murders, sitting in Antoine McGee's car as close to moments before those murders occurred. Fleming's testimony would have enabled trial counsel...
Didn't the Indiana court say a half hour?
They unreasonably determined that fact in light of the evidence in the record. The testimony in the case shows that the Belofsky's brother said that he saw a man pointing a gun at his brother at either 4:15 or 4:30. He gave two different times in his testimony. And Patrick Fleming said he saw this man in the car at 4:10 or 4:20. Regardless of which time you believe, 4:10, 4:20, on the part of Mr. Fleming, or 4:15 or 4:30 on the part of Mr. Belofsky, it's clear that 30 minutes didn't elapse. I think the mistake made by the Indiana Supreme Court was the police arrived at the scene at 4:45, but that was after Mr. Belofsky had run down the street to a muffler shop down the street and asked for help. They called police. The police were dispatched and finally arrived at 4:45. But it's clear it wasn't 30 minutes before the shootings took place.
Was he ever retried for those Porter County
cases? No, he was not, Your Honor. No, he was not. Without Mr. Fleming's testimony, the jury in this case only heard that Mr. Ben-Yisrael had confessed to the crime, the weapon was found in his apartment, and that he told Mr. McGee that he had committed the crime. The jury heard absolutely nothing in this case about the police search for the shotgun killer, who was depicted in the composite sketch as a white or light-skinned man. And, of course, Mr. Ben-Yisrael is a black man. I think that makes all the difference here. In addition to unreasonably applying Strickland with respect to prejudice, as I mentioned, the Indiana Supreme Court unreasonably determined the facts in light of the evidence in its analysis. And first off, there's the issue of the timing between Mr. Fleming's observations and the shooting themselves. Moreover, contrary to the factual findings of the Indiana Supreme Court, Mr. Fleming was able to link the white or light-skinned man to the shootings. He didn't just see any person sitting across the street. He saw a man that he thought resembled the police composite sketch of the shotgun killer. That person has been positively identified by another eyewitness to a shotgun killing as Ronald Harris.
Well, how do you respond to the government's argument that at best this evidence would have implicated Harris, but that there is evidence that Ben-Yisrael was Harris's accomplice?
Well, I have a couple of responses. I guess first, Mr. Ben-Yisrael doesn't have to prove that he's innocent of the charges. You know, he need only show a reasonable probability of a different outcome if Fleming had testified, and that means he needs to show a better than negligible chance of establishing reasonable doubt. And I think that this evidence goes a long way toward that. But also,
I don't understand that. But what's your second point?
Well, I think also, you know, if there is in fact more than one shotgun killer, I think that significantly undercuts the evidence presented here.
If there are accomplices, though. Not just that there are multiple shotgun killers running around Indiana, but that these two guys work together.
Well, first, Mr. Ben-Yisrael's confession mentions no accomplices. He says that he actually shot all these people, when in fact we know that's not true, because Rhonda Hammersley saw the shooter, or excuse me, Carrie Gilson saw the person who shot her friend, Rhonda Hammersley, said it wasn't Mr. Ben Yisrael, said it was Mr. Harris. So we know that his confession is false and unreliable. And the only other evidence against Mr. Ben Yisrael in this case is there evidence connecting Ronald Harris and Mr. Ben Yisrael? There was no evidence presented in these proceedings whatsoever connecting
They're both connected with McGee, though, aren't they?
They are both connected with McGee. And Mr. Ben Yisrael, I believe, was an acquaintance of Mr. Harris, but I don't think there's any evidence in the record. Really, it's, you know, Antoine McGee is the central character here in terms of he had access to the Mr. Ben Yisrael's apartment where the shotgun was found. It was his car sitting across the street from the Bolovsky's murder scene. He knew Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris was seen at the scene. There's no evidence that places Mr. Ben Yisrael at the scene of the Bolovsky murders other than his false and unreliable statement. You know, they did present the evidence of the shotgun, but if there's more than one shotgun shooter, then the fact that the shotgun was found in Mr. Ben Yisrael's closet has significantly less bearing on whether he's guilty of these charges of killing the Bolovsky brothers. And the only other evidence against him, the confession, the shotgun, is Antoine McGee's testimony. And Antoine McGee obviously had a self-serving purpose for testifying against Mr. Ben Yisrael in this case. He received a reduced sentence, and the Seventh Circuit in the Porter County proceedings found that McGee's testimony was at, you know, unreliable and clearly problematic. And I think that assessment applies with equal force in this case. Well, if the court has any questions about claims 2 and 3 with respect to the admission of the confession or the Brady violations, but if there are no questions based on the briefing, I just ask this court to review what we put in the briefs on those issues.
Okay. Well, you'll have a chance to return if you want.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Huggins. Mr. Martin?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. This court should affirm the district court's denial of habeas relief with respect to Ben Yisrael's claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. Additionally, we ask this court...
What is the evidence against him besides the confession and the shotgun?
Your Honor, it is correct that the evidence against him was the shotgun, which was matched to a shell found at the scene.
And the shotgun evidence and
his confessions. And Mr. McGee's testimony is the chief evidence against him.
And McGee, right. So you have McGee and, right.
Your Honor,
wouldn't Fleming's testimony have undermined McGee?
Fleming's testimony...
Not undermine McGee directly, but I mean undermine the government's case.
Your Honor, it wouldn't have in this case. And here's why. This kind of theory, this light-skinned man theory, wasn't going to work in this case, Your Honor. It did work in the ones that...
So why wouldn't it work here? Because he didn't have stringy hair or what?
Well, in those cases that he was acquitted in, it's not as if he was able to come up with this evidence of an alternative culprit on his own. The victims of these crimes, state's witnesses, were giving testimony that was equivocal about the race of the man and that suggested that he could have been a light-skinned or white man. And I think it's important to note...
Is he a dark-skinned black or light-skinned?
Mr. Ben Yisrael? He is, by all accounts from the record, darker skinned than Mr. Harris or what the composite suggests, but then not as dark skinned as Antoine McGee. But in those cases, the victims that survived, that gave testimony, couldn't say or in fact affirmatively said that it was a lighter skinned man. So this kind of evidence in that case would only further support any kind of equivocation in that testimony. But here it's not going to work. You have Mr. Ben Yisrael's confessions, the weapon, Antoine McGee's testimony, which we understand is testimony that the jury has been told has been procured because he's been offered a deal. So, of course, that kind of testimony always carries less weight than testimony that is not encumbered by those circumstances. But it still was consistent with the confession and with the ballistic evidence. The evidence here would only support, as far as other witnesses' observations, that a darker-skinned man was seen leaving the tailor shop. Now, this, I wanted to point out that with respect to all of these prosecutions, as far as I could tell, I reviewed the transcripts from the acquittals, as well as a transcript in this case. There was an order in limine, in effect. It wasn't sought by the state. It was sought by Ben Israel to not refer to the other shootings in the investigations.
Am I correct that the statement of Fleming's affidavit is that he went, made a U-turn, went by him, and viewed him from a composite sketch in a newspaper?
Yes, he said that he saw a white or light-skinned man in the car that he thought resembled the composite.
That's the entirety of his statement?
No, he offered an estimate of the man's height, despite the fact that the man was seated in the car and Mr. Fleming was in his car when he made the observation.
He made a U-turn, went by the car, and looked in.
Yes. Yes, that is my interpretation of the affidavit and the information.
He saw the man reach down between his legs.
Yes, and he said he thought he had a gun, but he could not say that he saw a gun or that he knew it was a gun, but he thought he had a gun. And he also gave some statements to police with respect to negative energy that he sensed from the man.
What?
Negative energy?
Negative energy, Your Honor.
That's what he felt, he said?
Yes, apparently in some way he sensed negative energy from this man. but the witnesses that, in this case, defense counsel was going to continue to employ the strategy that had worked previously, which was just to rely on the state's inability to put a witness on the stand that said, yes, that's the man. This is the man that did these shootings. And in this instance, the defense put on witnesses during its portion of the case to testify about what they saw in the aftermath of the shootings, and they were witnesses that saw a darker-skinned man with a shotgun leaving the area of the tailor shop. So
but
with
if
that...
They'd, if they'd called Fleming, was there any... Are you suggesting there'd be some some downside to their calling Fleming?
I think that there's a potential, Your Honor, for having violated an order in limine with regard to other investigations of other shootings. And with regard to Ronald Harris...
Well, you have to explain that.
Are you saying that jury doesn't hear anything about the composite sketch or anything?
He didn't see the composite in this trial, Your Honor. I believe that the composite was shown to the jury in previous trials.
But not in this trial?
No. And I think in the previous trials, it's because there was testimony about the light-skinned man. Now, here... Had they wanted to present Patrick Fleming's testimony, at that time, Ronald Harris had already been convicted in Porter County of the murder of Harshon Dhaliwal at the Hudson Station. He had already been convicted of the murder of Rhonda Hammersley, the felony murder of Rhonda Hammersley, and the attempted murder of Kerry Gilson in Lake County. He had given a statement to police in which he admitted to being with Peterson, I'm sorry, Ben Israel, he formerly was called Peterson, riding around on October 30th when the murders that Mr. Ben Israel had previously been acquitted of. The police had this statement. It was admitted into evidence in the Lake County trial, and I just don't understand how this jury would have been sanitized from hearing any of that if they wanted to pursue this theory that the light-skinned man, the shotgun killer, if you will, Ronald Harris, was here and likely the perpetrator to the exclusion of Mr. Ben Israel. And the statement that he gave police that was admitted in the Lake County trial went into detail about how they rode together on the 30th, how Harris was with Ben Israel during the Hudson gas station killings.
So, did Ben Israel testify?
No, he did not, Your Honor.
Well, how then does the jury hear evidence about the statement not being reliable? Normally when you...
Mr. Ben Israel?
The state puts a confession in and you want to say, well, they beat that out of me or something. You have to testify about that, I would think.
Oh.
He claims his statement was unreliable here.
That is because, Your Honor, the content of the... Mr. Ben Israel confessed to all of these murders.
I know.
And during the questioning that produced the statements, he gave answers to specific questions. The authorities were trying to get some specific, fairly detailed information out of Mr. Ben Israel, and he wasn't very helpful in providing it. In this case, he did provide the information that he had shot one of the Belovsky brothers at the lower level and one above, which was consistent with the crime scene. But with regard to a lot of other details, he would either give evidence or he would give representations that weren't consistent with the physical scene with regard to specific little details. And of course, as opposing counsel pointed out, he claimed shooting responsibility for all seven of the murders when, in fact, I think it was fairly well proved in the Gilson-Hammersley trial that Mr. Harris was the trigger man in that case. The point being, though, that there was a strategy that had proved successful for these lawyers, and they had, in fact...
Was any evidence... I'm pursuing Judge Evans' question. Was any evidence presented in this case that the confession was inaccurate or unreliable?
No, Your Honor, other than that there were certain little inconsistencies, factual inconsistencies, and the fact that he claimed
totally... Well, that was brought out during the trial?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That was brought out during the trial? The jury heard the inconsistencies?
Yes, his attorneys did a good job of questioning the police officers that conducted the interviews that resulted in the statements and pointed out that Mr. Peterson had given some inconsistent statements within those statements. And it was vague about certain things that he might have known.
The inconsistent statements would mitigate against the truth of the confession. Is that what they heard?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think that it could be interpreted that way.
I thought the argument was that some of the things that were said were just kind of common knowledge. It was things that
they make that argument as well, Your Honor.
Or something like that. So anybody would have known.
Yes, they made the argument that he would have known these things from media accounts, to some extent, media accounts. The jury was made aware of this. Mm-hmm. However, the fact remained that Mr. Ben Israel, I'm sorry I keep doing that, confessed to these seven murders. The shotgun was found in his home. It was conclusively linked to the shooting here. And
just curious, why wasn't he ever retried on that, the Porter County cases? The state had a confession there, too.
Your Honor, I do not know why Porter County did not proceed against him again. I know that when this court affirmed the grant of habeas relief, there was discussion about seeking certiorari, and Porter County at that time was concerned about the time frame. How much time had elapsed? Were there speedy trial concerns? And I don't know what ultimately persuaded them to not move forward again on that. It's our belief that there is no statute of limitations. Mr. Peterson was ordered to be released from custody on those convictions and sentences.
Is this the only live conviction at the moment?
This is the only these are the only two live convictions, Your Honor. And if I could quickly move on to just the appeal that we brought. Judge Sharp granted relief.
The consecutive 60-year sentence?
Yes, Your Honor. Based on concerns about the Porter County convictions having some weight in supporting the appropriateness of those sentences. And our position is that this is clearly a matter of state law. The Indiana Court of Appeals was exercising its power under the Indiana Constitution, Article 1, Section 17, where it can review and revise sentences, and found that sentence appropriate and supported by the fact that there were two murders committed here, which would have been sufficient even to support a sentence of death, which we know Mr. Ben Israel is no longer under. Mm-hmm. If the court has no further questions, we would ask that the district court be reversed on the grant of habeas relief with respect to the sentences and to be affirmed in all other respects.
OK. Okay, thank you, Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Huggins, how much time does she have? 5 minutes or 4 minutes? Yeah.
First of all, to answer some of the questions that were raised in your questioning of the state, Mr. Ben-Yisrael's trial counsel did attack the credibility of the confession in terms of asking the police about details from the confession that were wrong, inconsistent with the crime scene. And they also did note that details that were correct were in the media and publicly known and still somewhat vague, like there was one brother upstairs and one brother downstairs. And that did come out through the police testimony. And it's important to note that Mr. Ben-Yisrael didn't testify in any of these trials. In the first two acquittals, two trials in which he was acquitted, the confession came in, the shotgun came in, he didn't testify, the composite came in, and he was acquitted. And in this case, had trial counsel known about Patrick Fleming, the same thing could have happened.
Martin says that the difference is in those cases there was victim testimony that couldn't identify him.
He's somewhat wrong in that regard. In the first trial...
What's somewhat wrong mean?
Well, in the first trial, Carrie Gilson actually did witness the shooting. She saw the shooter. She said it was Ronald Harris. In the second trial, there were no actual eyewitnesses to the shooting itself. There were people who saw a man shortly before the murder took place.
They didn't describe the defendant, your defendant.
They did not. They described the person in the composite sketch, Ronald Harris. And in this case... I'm sorry?
That's different.
Yes.
Well, in this case, Patrick Fleming, who was probably the last customer at the tailor shop, noticed a man.
An eyewitness, right?
Well, he was there.
This negative energy business.
Well, I think what he's getting at is.
No. What he's getting at? What did he say?
Well, he did use the experience or the expression negative energy. But what happened was, as he was leaving the tailor shop, he saw a car across the street.
Don't give anybody up here with negative energy.
Well, yeah. It's not my choice of words. It's his choice of words. But
I know.
He saw a man sitting in the car, in a car across the street from the tailor shop, who caught his attention. He was suspicious. The man was acting suspiciously. He noticed him. He made a U-turn, got close, saw the man.
What did he say aroused his suspicions?
Well, he thought the man had a gun.
The street, he saw this when
he made the U-turn. Again, I know negative energy isn't exactly.
What is the context of negative energy? What did he say?
Well, that's essentially what he said. That he felt negative energy coming from the man.
Blurt out negative energy. It must be in a sentence or something.
He
right?
felt negative energy coming from the man. He had a sense of negative energy. So
never felt better.
But the point is, he had no reason to take note of this man other than the way the man was acting.
No,
he didn't know the man.
Sounds goofy, right?
Well,
he felt it's like Kucinich with the flying saucers. He felt a great intelligence radiating down at him.
But
this isn't just any man.
Don't badmouth my candidate.
It's important to note the context. Northwest Indiana was experiencing a series of shotgun shootings. The police composite had been in the media. He saw this man who looked like the man in the police composite
really
right across the
favor
street.
Of you, right? What you're saying is kind of popular hysteria. So someone sees someone and feels waves of energy coming at him.
This isn't just anyone. This is someone who was the last customer probably at the tailor shop of the day. As he walked out, the scene of the crimes, saw a man who...
This is not the scene of the crime. This became a crime scene later.
A crime scene probably 5 minutes later, and that's the point. The man who'd committed the other shotgun shootings was seen across the street from the tailor shop shortly before the crimes.
You can't say that Fleming identified this person as Harris.
Well, he identified the man as the person in the composite. He didn't know that Ronald Harris was the person in the composite.
Well, what about Mr. Martin's point? The composite, if you start bringing in evidence, where's the composite from? What's that based on?
Well, trial counsel, had they had the testimony of Patrick Fleming, could have brought in the composite without necessarily bringing in the other shootings.
Bring stuff in about why the composite? Why is there a composite?
Well, and it's important to note, though, that
murders and so on comes.
Mr. Ben-Yisrael was acquitted in trials 1 and 2, and Mr. Harris was convicted. He's the one who's been convicted.
So you want all that stuff in?
I'm saying that it would have been a decision of trial counsel whether to just introduce the composite.
No, it's not a decision just of the defense counsel. Obviously not.
Well, also of the court, of course.
What about a prosecutor?
Well, again, there were numerous motions in limine. I'm sure the same thing would have happened, you know, in additional proceedings. But the point is, the evidence would have been entirely different. The centerpiece of the defense case would have been Patrick Fleming seeing the man in the composite. And that was successful in two previous trials where the state could have done the exact same thing and did.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Huggins.
Thank you.
And thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.
Excellent job.